So a lot of times women will feel out of control with food, or they think that if they have one bite of an off-limit food like ice cream, they won't be able to stop eating. But restriction is almost always, the root of the problem. So even though they struggle with emotional eating and binge eating, and they think that, it's just a matter of power, or they're just not able to honor their fullness and things like that, honestly, almost always at the root of everything, it's some form of restriction.
Welcome to Weighing In on Happy, the only podcast that dives deep into discussions around weight, eating disorders, mental health, body image, intuitive eating, wellness, confidence, and so much more. Each week, you'll be coached through different stories and strategies on how to start living your best life today. So, if you're ready, here's your host, Victoria Evans.
This episode of Weighing In on Happy has been brought to you by my Craving Food Freedom membership program. If you are looking to join an international community of women collectively healing their relationship with food and their body, then this is the place for you. If you're currently feeling out of control and afraid around some foods, thinking obsessively about food and your body all day long, you're tired of saying that tomorrow is a new day and you'll start over, that some foods are good and bad, and just feeling alone on this journey and wanting some accountability, community, and support so you can break free and live a life of food freedom, then be sure to check out my website, www.victoriaevansofficial.com, and check out the members tab. You can find out everything you need to know there and sign up immediately and get full access to this program. Now, before we dive into this episode, I wanted to say that this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only, and sometimes entertainment. So do not take what is said in this podcast as medical advice. Please seek medical health professionals. Hey, you guys, welcome back to Weighing In on Happy. My name is Victoria Evans, an intuitive eating coach, and I am joined today by Bonnie Roney, who is a registered dietitian.
Hi, thank you so much for having me today, Victoria. I am so excited to chat with you.
Yeah, so you guys might know Bonnie from her wildly popular Instagram account at diet.culture.rebel, so you should definitely check her out if you haven't already. And she helps those struggling in their relationship with food to release the food guilt and embrace a life of intuitive eating and food freedom. So I love it. Right off the bat, I would love to know, what does it mean to be a diet culture rebel?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And honestly, being a diet culture rebel is just getting back to the basics. So finding your intuitive eater, what we were all born with. So when we were all born, as toddlers and young kids, we knew what we needed to eat, how much we needed to eat. We could really regulate what we needed to eat just based off how our body felt and what our body was telling us. So now as adults, and for many women that I've worked with and talked with, over time, the media and what we've learned through diet culture kind of takes us away from that intuitive eater that we were all born with. And we're told and taught so many different messages about, eating a certain way, like diet culture might tell us to eat at specific times during the day or to cut out certain foods or food groups like carbs or bread. And there's just so many rules and so many things that we feel like we should be doing. So to be a diet culture rebel, it really just means getting back to the basics and honoring your body, in a way that we should, like letting our body tell us what and how much we need to eat and just listening to our body instead of all of the different information that we're told in media. So that's really it. It's really simple, but in today's world and kind of what we're taught as women, it's not so simple anymore, right? So that's why it feels a little bit rebellious to go against all of these messages that we're taught that don't serve us. And that's what it means to be a diet culture rebel.
I love it. Yeah, it's so simple getting back to the basics when you think about it like that, but then it's so multi-layered. Like, we spend so many years just accumulating the different rules, the lack of trust, the the new superfood, the new this, the new that, and it's like always just getting further and further away from what we intuitively know, what we were born with. And so it's rebellious, but it's funny that we think of it that way, because it shouldn't be rebellious. It should be rebellious to, be on diets and be trying to change your body in certain ways. Yet it's interesting that like being intuitive is a rebellious act, but that's just, again, a reflection of diet culture.
Yeah, I agree so much. And so many people think, that you can't trust your body and things like that. So that makes it, a little bit different. I know sometimes when I tell people about intuitive eating that aren't familiar with intuitive eating. They're like, no way you could do that and not just want to eat pizza and cookies and chips all day. You can't just listen to your body. And it's like, no, you can. You really can. So yeah, there's a lot that goes into it.
Oh yeah. I remember when someone had told me the idea of intuitive eating, and I laughed in their face. Cause like, if I can have as many donuts I want, I'm going to eat nothing but donuts for the rest of my life. But like that feeling of being like out of control and wanting every single donut is a reflection of the restriction and the rules and the meal plan, like all those really, you know, hyper restrictive things that polarize food as good and bad. And when we eliminate those things and make food, you know, neutral and we're allowed in the permission, it's like, oh, I don't need to all of a sudden eat all of the donuts, you know, and it's this crazy thing. But until you kind of start to lean into it and explore the world, it can seem really bizarre and even scary.
Yeah, it can definitely feel scary and overwhelming, but I couldn't agree with you more, Victoria, about how you said that it's just something that you kind of have to lean in and do yourself. And then you can make your own judgments from there. It's normal to have all of these fears, especially when we're taught we can't trust ourselves. You know, we're told that we should follow certain meal plans or guides and eat what other people are telling us to eat. You know, how could we build that trust with our bodies? So it's normal to have those fears, but the only way to really overcome them is to just dive in deep and give it a shot.
Mm-hmm. It's difficult, it's scary, but it's worth it. And I know on your account, you've talked a little bit about, you know, your struggles with your eating disorder and even as it relates to now being an intuitive eater. Could you share kind of what that journey looked like for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I will go ahead and say that I was never, you know, clinically diagnosed with an eating disorder, but my behaviors were consistent with bulimia. So, you know, I know that I did struggle with an eating disorder, but I do want to say that I did not have that diagnosis. Mm-hmm. But yeah, when I was a teenager, I struggled with that. And I struggled with my relationship with food probably from when I was about 12 years old to maybe my early 20s. So 20 years old, you know, I really struggled a lot. And I grew up with someone in my family who didn't really model a great relationship with food either. So my grandma had anorexia. So I have a lot of really young memories as a child, just, you know, kind of hearing my mom talk to her and trying to get her to be healthier, that stuck with me for a long time. And same with my aunt. She also struggled with an eating disorder. She struggled with bulimia. So I have all these memories and they really did play a big role in my relationship with food too. But when I, you know, became a young adult and I started to take all of my classes in college and become a registered dietitian, that's when I was really able to start moving away from kind of my upbringing and what I had learned and thought was okay. Because even though I didn't really struggle with, you know, my eating disorder for all of those years between the ages of 12 and 20, I still obsessed over food. It caused me a lot of stress and I was obsessed with my body and all of those things. So when I started to studying to become a registered dietitian, that's when I was really able to start letting go of everything and just build more trust with my body and understand, you know, food is just food. I need it. Like, everyone needs food and it's not going anywhere. So I might as well start to have a good relationship with it, right? Because I need it for the rest of my life.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Looking at it like as a relationship, I think, is one of the most important things, because it can be really toxic. It can be really hating, like, and lacking so much love, and can be quickly become just this abusive thing if we don't kind of keep it in check. And I know for myself, like, it was almost praised, this really toxic relationship I had with food, you know, oh, I don't eat this, I restrict, I fast, you know, not eating for 16 hours, eating ridiculously low quantities and working out for insane amount of hours. People are like, oh, your motivation, your willpower. So It's important to heal our relationship with food, but it's also difficult in a society that often praises having disordered relationship with food.
Yeah, it is very difficult. And that's what makes it tricky. And, you know, there's a lot of education that needs to be done on this too, because most people just, they're not aware that some of the things they say can have such an impact on other people, especially, I would say, younger girls. So when girls are really susceptible in their younger teenage years and as a young adult and things like that, you know, hearing some things like, oh, you look really great, look at your discipline, you look so healthy and fit, you know, those things, they can really be damaging. But like I said, I think that just more education is needed, because not everybody understands the harm that it can do. So that's what I always try and remind myself, because I can get caught up getting really frustrated about how, the media acts and how the world acts, you know, with body shaming and obsessing over the way people look and how they should eat. But at the end of the day, if they don't know any better, you know, what are they supposed to do? All we can really do is try and be positive and share what we know to hopefully impact others and be able to really encourage change people through just teaching them and letting them know that there's a different way. And, you know, the words they say really can impact other people.
Mm-hmm. And that's why social media can be such a double-edged sword, because it can really be that opportunity to expose what's going on. I know recently I was really involved in a lot of talk about like thin privilege and weight stigma and fat phobia. That's been a topic coming up quite a bit now, like things I'd never even heard of a few years ago. And it can be this amazing world, social media, where you learn, understand, realize you're not alone, build a community, but it can also be really toxic. In my story, like, struggled with my weight my entire life, went on a, you know, Instagram influencer diet, basically saw the one with the best abs, bought her 12-week weight loss guarantee program, lost like 80 pounds in like weeks. It was insane. And then basically went from like, you know, invisible to inspiration essentially overnight. Yeah. And was posted all over her channels with like millions of people being like, oh my God, look at Victoria. She's such a success story, la, la, la. People asking me how I did it. And like social media became this really dark place where I felt like I had to maintain this image. People were continuing to feed me these disordered ideas. And it was so, so toxic. And so I love how your account is so informational and educational and inspirational as well, because it provides an opportunity for other people to see what is possible when for a lot of the time we're only looking at a very small portion of before and after photos and thinking like that is the only way to be happy and, you know, macros and calories and just being hyper restrictive.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I really appreciate you sharing that, because I think that so many people think that's mostly what's on social media. I know when some people find my page, they're like, well, I'm so happy I found your page. I've never seen anything like this. You know, I'm just used to weight loss pages and before and after photos and things like that. So just going off what I had said earlier, I think that a lot of people just don't know and understand that another world exists. And like you said, social media can be a double-edged sword. It can really take you down a rabbit hole. And but at the same time, you know, depending on how you use it, it can also really help you out and help you improve your relationship with food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, social media is, it's awesome and it's terrible and it's amazing. And it's, it's definitely an interesting world to be a part of. And so you have an awesome following who are super engaged. Did you kind of set out being like, this Instagram is going to be, you know, really a place for me to launch this, you know, this career and educate? Or how did that come about, you know, starting that channel or starting that Instagram account?
Yeah, so I really did not know it was going to grow and get to the point that it's at now. I don't really know what I thought, honestly, when I started. I hate saying this, but you know, this is part of my journey and it's part of what brought me to where I am today. But when I started my Instagram, I used to promote weight loss. So I was a weight loss dietitian. So I had no hopes and dreams of doing what I was doing now. And I think that that's what a lot of women experience when they struggle with their relationship with food, because I had a lot of shame and embarrassment around my behaviors with food. And that's why I just didn't dive in doing what I'm doing now. I started talking about weight loss because I had told myself that I was never going to share the struggles that I faced with anyone. So, you know, at this point when I was promoting weight loss, only like my husband and my immediate family members knew about how I struggled with my relationship with food growing up. So over time, you know, when I kept doing weight loss, it just wasn't sitting well with me. I couldn't do it. I felt morally wrong. Like I knew I wasn't doing the right thing. And I had grown my account to about 16K before I pivoted. But, you know, I thought about it for about a month and I just decided that I could not keep doing weight loss. It didn't feel right. It wasn't sitting with me. I didn't feel like I was helping other people. So I decided to pivot and switch to food freedom. And everything on my page has really evolved since then. So I didn't know where it was going to take me. I just followed what felt right and started sharing information that I really stood behind and believed in. I was vulnerable, you know, I shared a lot of my struggles and that's where it's really brought me today. So I had no clue that where it would take me. I didn't know how my Instagram would grow, how I could impact people, but I just kind of followed my faith and what felt right. And then it evolved into something that it is today. And I'm so thankful that I did this, and it's so much more rewarding than weight loss ever was. So if anyone listening here is nervous about food freedom, or you're even just, you know, confronting some struggles that you might have faced, know you're not alone. Like, even me as a dietitian, I had so much shame around my struggles growing up, and I wouldn't share them. But the sooner you can face, you know, what you've gone through and talk about it and confront it, the more free you'll be able to get, and you'll be able to overcome whatever you're struggling with so much easier.
Hey, you guys, I want to quickly hop in here and give a quick shout out to one of the members in my Craving Food Freedom membership program. She wrote, "Today I allowed myself to eat without counting my calories. Whoa, I cannot believe this day has come. I've always thought I was going to be chained to my calorie counter, to my Fitness Pal, but today I didn't. I was able to fully be free from it, and I'm so incredibly excited. I've also found that nighttime is a struggle when it comes to overeating, but today I was able to choose snacks, I was able to eat throughout the day, enjoy the taste of it, and eat mindfully. Again, wow, I didn't think this was going to happen. I didn't think this would be possible. Small steps, but headed in the right direction. Today is a huge win for me. Thank you, Victoria, for all you do." So thank you so much for that incredible feedback. And now back to the episode.
Mm-hmm. And I love, as well, like, social media, how you can share your story and be open and vulnerable, because I know for myself, I was like, I'm the only one going through this. Like, I'm broken. Like, there's something wrong with me. Like, I just need to have more, just be better, basically. Like, tomorrow I just need to start over and just do a better job of, like, being perfect, essentially. And not realizing, like, there's so many people out there struggling with, like, bulimia, anorexia, binge eating, or, like, every, or disordered eating, like, whatever it is, exercise addiction, or any just kind of damaged relationship with food. Like, there are so many of us, and it really thrives in that shame and that secrecy. And when we're able to openly talk about it and be like, yeah, you're not alone, like, this is what I've been through, it's like, oh my God, like, all of a sudden it's like that weight off your shoulders, and you can start to connect and heal. And, but the first step is, yeah, kind of really knowing it's okay that you've struggled. It's okay. You've been through those things. Like, collectively as a group, everyone has some kind of, you know, damaged relationship with food on some various level, because of the society we live in and diet culture.
Right. Yeah. And, I would say most women do struggle with their relationship with food in some capacity.
Mm-hmm. And it's just been normalized, you know, like the starting the diet on Monday and all of that, it's just become this, you know, it's whatever's next on the magazine cover of, like, how to lose 100 pounds in 5 minutes. Like, that's just become, like, the normal thing, essentially. And so it's awesome when people can be vulnerable and share and be like, it's not, you know, normal to be constantly on a diet or restricting everything. And, like, despite what media or even some, you know, Instagram accounts are kind of telling us we should be.
Mm-hmm. I could not agree more with that. I think that, you know, this should, I mean, that's what I'm hoping to do on my page, is normalize these struggles that so many women face, because I think we're kind of taught to, like, hide them and not talk about them. But the fact of the matter is, so many women struggle with their relationship with food. So I think it is important to normalize it. Like, it's okay to struggle. It's okay to ask for help, and you're not alone.
Mm-hmm. And so in your work as a dietitian, what would you say is, like, the most common issue that people will come to you with?
So for me, in my private practice, most of the women I work with struggle with emotional eating and binge eating. And that's really where I've decided to kind of focus on most, because I just enjoy helping women overcome that the most. I don't know. It just resonates with me. Specifically in this food freedom realm. So a lot of times women will feel out of control with food, or, you know, they think that if they have one bite of an off-limit food like ice cream, they won't be able to stop eating. But restriction is almost always, you know, the root of the problem. So even though they struggle with emotional eating and binge eating, and they think that, you know, it's just a matter of power, or they're just not able to honor their fullness and things like that, honestly, almost always at the root of everything, it's some form of restriction, whether they're trying to overexercise to make up for, you know, a binge, or they're trying to skip meals to save up calories for later, or, you know, they're scared about their hunger. You know, there's always something at the root of it related to restriction that really propels their emotional eating and binge eating.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, like you said, like, thinking you can just kind of get rid of the binging or the emotional eating without the restriction. I know for myself, when I was at my worst struggling with bulimia, I was like, oh, I can just like get rid of the binge eating and just keep all the restriction. Like it was like a math equation. I was like, if I just like take this away, then I can just be skinny and still like eat perfectly and it'll be fine. And then it was just like this cycle of like, okay, I'll just do better tomorrow. I'll just do better tomorrow. Like I'll just have more willpower, whatever it is. Yeah. And yeah, it's like, there's a reason your body is binging. It's not self-sabotage, it's self-protection. Like your body is doing this for a reason, and digging into what that real reason is to understand like, you're not broken. There's nothing wrong with you, but there is some, you know, we just have some maladaptive coping mechanisms to deal with some level of restriction going on. And so again, like normalizing that, having it be a conversation, and again, people thinking, you know, oh, something wrong with me for emotionally eating or binge eating, but like, there's nothing wrong with you. Your body oftentimes is just trying to protect you.
Yeah, I really couldn't agree more. And that's what I really love as a dietitian, is helping people overcome this restriction phase. Because a lot of the women I've worked with, they've been to therapy for this before. So they've like dug deep into all of these emotional things that I don't touch. That's out of my scope of practice. Mm-hmm. But, you know, typically with their therapist, they haven't talked about actually, you know, not restricting in the food piece there, which makes sense because, you know, they're there for therapy and not, you know, what they're eating really. But that's what I love about a dietitian, working as a dietitian with them, is sometimes just by them overcoming this restriction and, you know, eating like a normal amount of food and enough for their body, that's enough in and of itself for them to overcome this. I mean, it's not the case for all of the women I work with, but for a lot of them, when they just eat enough for their body, they can overcome this just with that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like, it can be that simple. Like people are just under eating and then they end up binging because their body is so starving and so hungry. They're like, oh my God. And it's like, they think it's deep seated and all that. And it's just like, if you just eat a little bit more, it'll probably be fine. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Our bodies are so smart. They are. And I think we forget to give them credit for that too. So, you know, if you're not eating enough during the day and you're binging later, like that's your body looking out for your best interest, because your body is smart and your body loves you and it does everything it can to protect you.
Exactly. And yeah, even with like emotional eating, I always think it's like your body's trying to be your best friend. Like it's trying to like flush you with like the serotonin and the dopamine, mm-hmm. all these things. You're like, oh, you know, Victoria's sad, Bonnie's sad right now. What makes her feel better? Chocolate. Let's go get her some chocolate. Yes. It's trying to be like your grandma, like feeding you a bunch of food when you come over. Right. It's like, look, we're helping. And it's just like, oh, okay. That's what you're trying to do here. And meeting it with so much self-compassion, understanding, and like, okay, it's okay to emotionally eat, but I think it's, you know, digging into the reasonings behind it. Like, why are we doing this? What's the layer underneath it? And then making it, I know for myself anyways, like I can make, if I want to eat emotionally, it's a choice. You know, it's not like I have to. It can be like, I'm really sad right now. I recognize that I'm feeling lonely and that's okay. And I'm going to have a little bit of chocolate to feel better, versus just kind of like bypassing the awareness stage of it. Because by not having that awareness, there's no opportunity for us to choose differently. So maybe it is having the chocolate one day, maybe the next day it is talking to a friend and digging into that a little bit more and doing some self-care practices. But again, there's like, even comes in emotionally eating, like it's not necessarily a bad thing and it gets such a bad rap. And I think it's just having different tools in the tool belt.
Yeah, I agree. You know, in emotional eating, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it should not be your only coping mechanism. So it's okay if you cope, you know, you want to cope with food for comfort. Like sometimes even just childhood memories bring you back to that comfort. Like when we're sick and sometimes chicken noodle soup sounds good, like that's very comforting. So it's okay for food to be a source of comfort for you, but it should not be your only source of comfort. So if it's covering up a lot of emotions like loneliness or anxiety that you need to deal with, you know, it's important to acknowledge that and deal with that. But at the same time, you can still use emotional eating for comfort as needed, just not your only coping mechanism.
Yeah, for sure. Otherwise, it's like just a band-aid over a bullet wound. It just like keeps like throwing on the band-aids. And like, hey, there's actually an underlying reason here that this emotion is coming up. And like, otherwise, we're just, basically trying to feed it to avoid it. And like, that's not gonna help us in the long run. So with that said, talking about kind of tools and stuff, I'd love to hear, what are some of your favorite tools that we could maybe start implementing to really help us, you know, with my other emotional eating or binge eating or just healing our relationship with food in general?
Yeah. So one thing that I love, which you actually touched on earlier, Victoria, is to think about your body as a relationship and how you can form a better relationship with your body. And the more you can do that, the more you'll really be able to improve your relationship with food. So some examples I like to give are, you know, think about how you can be consistent with your body. Like, what can your body expect from you? This might be, you know, honoring your hunger or eating, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and having snacks when you need them, and checking in with your body, like seeing how it's feeling, what your body needs. So are you hungry? Okay, eat. You know, when you're full, you can honor that. So building that relationship with your body, leaning into some discomfort, because with intuitive eating and food freedom, some of this stuff can be uncomfortable. If you're really emotionally eating or binge eating a lot, you know, it can be uncomfortable to practice eating more during the day. If you're not used to that, it can be uncomfortable to, you know, not over-exercise to make up for a binge. But the more you can lean into that discomfort and do things that you're not, you know, familiar with, like not over-exercising to make up for a binge, right? So that you can break the two away from each other. You know, that's all necessary to improve your relationship with food. So the outcome of all the work you put in to build that relationship with your body through consistency, through checking in with yourself, through leaning into discomfort, that's what's going to give you your better relationship with food in your body. And it doesn't happen overnight. And that's another thing I like to remind everyone of. You know, this is a journey. And if you think about all the time you've spent maybe struggling with your relationship with food or getting disconnected from your body, it's only natural for it to take time to get back in touch with your body. So that's a huge tip I have. But I also, something else that's really big is just not labeling food. So a lot of women look at food as good or bad. Like, as an example, they might say that, you know, salad is good and chocolate is bad. And when you do that, that induces some morality. So it can make you feel good or bad based off what you eat. And food shouldn't have that kind of power over us. It should not induce any morality. Of course, a salad and chocolate have different nutritional makeups. You know, I can't lie about that. I'm a dietitian. I know that. But it doesn't make one good or bad, and it doesn't make you good or bad based off what you eat. So removing those labels is also very helpful. So those are my top two tips that I have that I think are so important to just start practicing today to heal your relationship with food.
Yeah. Oh, I love both of those, especially when it comes to like food labeling, for example. I always use the example of an apple where I'm like, any food can be good or bad. It's just why you're eating it. Right. And coming at it. And I always ask people, I'm like, is it love or is it shame? Like, am I doing this because I love my body, love the taste, it's delicious, love the crunch? Or it's like this shame and this fear of like, what, I want the brownie, but I'm going to eat this instead. And then I'm afraid of my body changing, but I really did want the brownie. Like, and it's like, it's, you know, no food is, like you said, good or bad. It's just kind of, what is the reasoning behind why you're eating it? And when it comes to the relationship with food, like, yeah, I love what you said, like it's long-term. And in our society, we're so conditioned to look at these quick fixes and like lose 40 pounds. And like I said before, like 2 days kind of thing. And like the new diet to do this. And we're so habituated in our society with quick fixes, Amazon deliveries here the next day. And so like putting in the work to actually, you know, heal your relationship with food and have it take like time and effort is, again, not something that is talked about a lot in our society, not something that we even do a lot anymore. And so understanding, like, it takes work, it takes effort. It's not, you're not doing it wrong. If it takes, you know, time to build it, you're going to have mess ups. Those are opportunities to learn, have a lot of self-compassion, and knowing like this relationship is for life. So it can't just be, you know, like a one night thinking you're okay, now I'm an intuitive eater. It takes work. Yeah.
I love that. And I love how you put in how we're kind of conditioned to have all of these quick fixes and things that come quickly in life. And I think that's how things are moving. Like this with your example of Amazon, you order something, you have it the next day. You know, we like getting stuff right away, but sadly, that's not how our relationship with food works. You know, and I think that it's important to appreciate the journey along the way instead of just only being focused on, you know, the end goal of having food freedom, not stressing over food. There's a lot that can be learned along that journey, and you can learn tools and practices that you can take with you throughout the rest of your life. I mean, we're always going to be dealt with different stressors and things that can definitely impact our relationship with food. Like, as we're recording this right now, we're in the middle of a pandemic. No one saw that coming, and that's stressful, but You know, with tools that you learn as an intuitive eater, you can always use those to help guide you through some of these stressful situations so that, you know, you can still manage your relationship with food without resorting to old behaviors that don't serve you, like binge eating or restricting.
Yeah, absolutely. It's long-term. It's like an instant gratification versus like a long-term relationship that is built. And yeah, it transfers over to everything in your life. You know, it's not my dog in the background, if you guys are wondering. If you guys follow me on Instagram, you'll know that's my foster dog, Leo, who gets very excited when people come by. So that's him in the background, if you guys can hear him. But yeah, I could not agree more with what you are saying. And I so appreciate you coming and chatting with me today. And the question I ask all of my guests, because the topic of my my podcast is weighing in on happy. And so the kind of the spoiler alert there is that, you know, weight loss and our weight is not the key to happiness. And so for you, what is one thing that you would say makes you happy?
So it doesn't have to be food related?
Whatever you want. Any answer is acceptable.
I am not just saying this because your dog is barking. I am saying this because I love my dog. So my golden retriever, puppy Cooper, it makes me very happy. He's always so happy to see me. He loves to hang out. He's like my number one coworker. I mean, he's my only coworker. He makes me very happy.
A great answer. Yes. So I love dogs, like, especially right now, like, just such a source of comfort. And like I said, they get so excited and they come and like run and meet you. And like, no one gets that excited when you come to the door, but a dog is like always just like,
right. Yeah. I could be gone for 5 minutes and then come back in from getting the mail. And he's like, so happy to see me. It just makes me feel so good about myself.
Yes. Oh, I couldn't agree more. So where can people find you?
So you can find me on Instagram at diet.culture.rebel or my website, which is just my first and last name. So it's bonnieroney.com.
Amazing. Thank you so much. You guys, you have to go and check her out. Amazing content and so grateful to have had you on today. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Victoria.
Hey, you guys. Thank you so much for listening to this episode with Bonnie. If you enjoyed it as much as I did, then please rate and review. Additionally, if you want a screenshot and tag me on Instagram to let you know that you listened, I would absolutely love that. Now, for more information on me, my programs, the Craving Food Freedom membership program, you can stop food fear and guilt so you can eat effortlessly and intuitively, then check out my website, www.victoriaevansofficial.com. You can also find me on Instagram, that is at Victoria Evans Official, and I've also dropped a little freebie there below for you in the show notes. So thank you so much for listening. Check out the show notes for all the different resources available to you. And until next week, I hope you have a fabulous day. Bye-bye.